Some nice stuff, but impossible people.
The Master. Later, at the hotel, a terse note from the master had been pushed under the door of Caro's room. She would have been taken aback by its contents had she noticed it and read it, but she did not. By the bed there was a silver-topped trolley with a bottle of champagne, a bowl of fruit, and a stiff cream envelope which contained invitations to various galleries and monuments, with the special compliments of Antonio Manca Graziadei, the Italian Minister for Culture. Caro was not drunk. Living with Angela meant that she was never drunk, but she felt reckless. Above all, she felt an intense curiosity. She woke the following morning with a strong sense of things not being right, of unresolved disasters all around. She remembered Angela first of all, and then what Davy had told her to do. She wondered what the master thought. There was an unfamiliar scent in the bed. She remembered about Davy, opened her eyes, half moaned and half yawned and rolled over. If you had to be led by anything. But there was no one else in the room. It was already late. She pushed herself out of bed. A mile and a half away, with the dew still on the grass, the Villa Borghese, one of the most opulent caskets of art and sculpture on the little green planet, had opened its doors early by special arrangement. David Petrie was standing in front of a terrifying figure pursuing a naked woman. Her hands, stretched upwards, were visibly turning into twigs and leaves. Davy had no intention of reading his guidebook, but he understood that in front of him was a cruel challenge. In those veins, liquid marble blood was running. The lungs of the figures were nothing more than stone, yet they were breathing, and one of them was dying. She was becoming wood, undergoing an agonizing metamorphosis. Air became stone, wood petrified too, and then flesh became stone. He remembered Ella as she spiraled downwards through the waters of the lagoon, a lump of marble attached to her neck. Really, who was the psychopath?
Clever guy!
Davy turned around. A squat, dark-suited man with light blue eyes and a fleshy red face was smiling at him.
Oh, yes, it's quite something. Bernini. The master propagandist for the Counter-Reformation, on a different side from you Scots at the time, I think. Are you here to size up the enemy?
Well, no, just a bit of early morning self-improvement. As it happens, I'm a Roman Catholic myself.
Sort of. No kidding. I guess I should have known that, Mr. Petrie. It is Mr. Petrie, isn't it? That's me. But how did... Sorry, I should introduce myself. I thought maybe you'd recognize me. Barnaby Jonathan Boyd, Director of Homeland Security. Most people call me Buzz. Yes, of course. We're supposed to be meeting, aren't we? Mr. Petrie, as you very well know, we were supposed to meet last night. For supper. I guess you were making some kind of point?
We had other plans.
An interesting use of we. The master, as your people call him, had given us to understand that you and Mrs. Phillips were deadly rivals. My view, though it seems the White House doesn't share it, was that on paper at least you were our man. We came here to do some business with you. Your country needs a big dose of investment. Your government needs some good economic news, and we need your help with some small matters. You understand all of that, Mr. Petrie? So how come you and Mrs. Phillips are thumbing your noses at us?
Davy walked slowly around the statue and then headed off to the next room. He was concentrating on not losing his temper.
There's lots more I want to see, he said over his shoulder, and not much time. Just because Caroline Phillips is my rival, it doesn't mean she's my enemy. And I think you grossly underestimate how difficult it would be for either of us to sell a much closer American alliance to our party. Labour might have changed, but not that much.
Buzz appeared to be barely listening. He gestured at another sculpture, this time one of David about to loose his slingshot, his body twisted with effort and his face in a timeless grimace.
There you go. That's the real thing. Back in the days when Europe could do this kind of stuff, the leading technology of the age, you would have been worth an alliance back then. Us, we've had more than 200 years of democracy and economic success, but we've never had a Bernini. I must say, Mr. Boyd, I'm surprised. I hadn't expected you to be a man of, well, culture. I'm not. But, Mr. Petrie, and here we come to the point of this conversation, my wife is a woman of great learning and discernment. If I'm actually a little less rough than I choose to appear, it's all down to her. She's from your part of the world, you know. You're married to a Scot. She calls herself American these days. Don't look back anymore, but yes. And not just a Scot, Mr. Petrie, but an Ayrshire lassie. Davy felt something stir inside him. Where in Ayrshire? Right question. Little town called Glaikett. Now then, what's your next question, Mr. Petrie?
Davy's throat was suddenly dry.
What was your wife's name? I mean, what was her name before she got married? Right question again, Mr. Petrie.
Smedley. Her name was Betty Smedley.
She was devoted to her father, Mr. Petrie. Devoted. He was a teacher. But you know that.
It would be wrong to say that Buzz was poking Davy in the chest. It was more that he was tapping him. Hard taps. Although he was squat, Buzz was a big man.
Yes, they spoke on the telephone almost every day. He gave Betty her love of literature, art. He gave Betty her curiosity. And her curiosity, Mr. Petrie, was what made me fall in love with her. But it fell away, Mr. Petrie. It all fell away like a building being demolished when that vile thing happened to her father and, of course, to her grandmother, too. She sought solace in the church, and her faith has kept her alive. Over the years, I've learned a lot from Betty about what you might call the world of the mind. Through her, I've come to respect Mr. Walter Smedley to understand what a remarkable man he must have been. I think he was a remarkable man. He taught my children. I knew him. Slightly.
You knew him. Slightly. Don't get funny with me.
I said that what happened to him was vile. Vile is a strong word, Mr. Petrie. I don't forget vile.
Crouched in the shadow of David, about to slay Goliath, Davy felt his knees begin to go. At that moment he caught sight of another man in the small gallery, sitting quietly on a guard's chair with his legs folded, watching the two of them closely. The master. What was he doing there? Didn't matter. The nick of time. But when the master unfolded himself and walked towards them, Buzz greeted them with a nod of acknowledgement. The master turned to Davy.
I see you're having that conversation after all. Well, none of us can ever escape the past entirely. On which subject? Ella sends her regards.
Ella?
You do remember Ella, don't you?
Now at last it was clear to Davy that he had been comprehensively set up, stitched up, ambushed and caught. What a fool. Time slowed down. He found himself standing outside looking in at himself. If he'd lost control and urinated on the floor of the gallery, he wouldn't have been surprised.
"What do you want?"
he asked, dry-mouthed. Buzz looked at the master, who replied for both of them.
"What we want is for you to help make Caroline Phillips the next leader of the Labour Party and Prime Minister of Great Britain. To do that, she has to distance herself from her girlfriend. And in doing that, she needs your wholehearted public support and private encouragement. When she wins, as she will, you will accept office as her foreign secretary. You will broker our new agreements, and you will help her every step of the way. Whatever else might happen between you is up to you. Though the country loves a cheesy story,
She has the charm, the charisma, which you lack. But you have a ruthlessness, as all three of us here know, which she doesn't.
Not me. It wasn't going to be me. Not ever.
No, her. Question of character, you understand.
Davy's first reaction was that none of this seemed nearly as bad as he'd feared. Do what they want, help her up into a job that could only be done by monsters. His second reaction, however, was that what they were asking was impossible. He'd had it. There was nothing left inside. And anyway, he knew that Caroline was a good person who would never, ever betray her soulmate.
"I'll try," he said. "But I don't think it can be done." "It can be done, Mr. Petrie," said Buzz, who looked entirely unsympathetic. "And you will help to make it happen. Or I will personally tear off your testicles and choke you with them."
"Goodness me," said the master. "The conference starts in an hour. We're going to miss breakfast."
"Was that really necessary, Buzz?"
"Shall we take a car back together? We could do the Caravaggios another time."
A clever plan.